You're listening to the Bloomberg Advantage with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Tiffany shares rallying for a second day after prop it at the luxury jewelry retailer topped estimates. We got that news yesterday. Cost-cutting was involved, though. Let's bring in one of our favorite people to talk about when it comes to Tiffany and more. Charlie Bobrinskoy back with us, vice chairman at Ariel Investments. Ariel has been invested in and out of Tiffany, I guess, over the past decade or so. Charlie, long time, right?
Maybe even a little more than that, probably late 90s.
Hey, what do you make of the latest going on with Tiffany?
Well, the thing about Tiffany is it's always a great company, but it's not always a great stock. So both things are true, and what's actually true right now is it's both a great company and a great stock. I wouldn't have said that in 2014 when the stock was at 102 and trading at 23 times forward earnings. But then people got nervous about Brexit and tourism, and Tiffany went all the way down to 59 in June. So now it's a much more attractive stock. It's still the great company it always was, but much more attractive investment opportunity.
Have you guys been adding to then positions, Charlie, at this point?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
The fund that I manage is the Ariel Focus Fund, and we got out of Tiffany when it got over 100. We're value investors, and it just wasn't the value stock. Everybody recognize the value in the company, the incredibly high margins, gross margins of over 60%, and just thought that that would continue forever, and we thought that that was probably unsustainable. And then everyone's gotten recently very nervous about tourism. The Chinese in particular don't seem to be traveling as much. They're not buying as much jewelry. And frankly, Wall Street bonuses have been a little softer, and Wall Street bonuses are in a very important part of Tiffany's business. So stock went all the way from 102 to 59.
Yeah. So, yeah, much more attractive at 59, as you mentioned. Hey, I should put out your focus fund to really a top performer so far in 2016. Talk to me about strategy this year. Has it been tough to kind of figure out where there are opportunities?
It really has been, Carol. This year has been dominated by people looking for yield, with treasuries getting down below the 10-year treasury below 1.5%, you've had people searching for yield, buying REITs, buying utility stocks, buying anything that had a high yield. And we, frankly, don't think those stocks are attractive right now. The good news is that started to change recently. The 10-year is now back up over 1.6%. People are realizing that you can get in a lot of trouble stretching for yield. So our strategy of buying value stocks is doing a lot better this year.
What about looking for dividends? How much of that is kind of playing into your thinking at this point? When you're looking for yield, dividends is kind of an easy play.
Yeah, and that is what's driven the market this year. Dividend stocks did extremely well early this year, and we would tell people to be cautious about that. People get excited about a 2.5 or a 3% dividend yield. That can get wiped out in 1 or 2 days if the Fed starts to increase interest rates. So we do think right now high dividend paying stocks are in general overpriced, and that's not a good place to go today, we would argue.
Well, I feel like you've queued me up really nicely for Janet Yellen. I wasn't necessarily going to go there, Charlie, but I mean, we've been talking a lot about Janet Yellen today after, you know, her speech in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, you know, kind of leaving the door open to say, you know, we could see some more rate moves this year. Do you think they're warranted?
Eventually, the tough thing, Carol, is to try to predict when something like this is going to happen. But in my opinion, interest rates are going to go up. It's just a question of when. And I will admit it's taken a lot longer than I would have thought. But this idea of negative interest rates and interest rates that are below inflationary expectations is just not sustainable. So they're going to go up. It's just a question of when. And so in that fact pattern, you're not going to do well investing in REITs or high dividend paying securities.
Well, when you look at, you know, the various companies, Charlie, that you invest in, we started off by, of course, talking about Tiffany. And, you know, I know the quarter was helped out by, you know, cutting costs because we aren't seeing the demand from either the tourists or from the affluent customer. When you look at various businesses and you look at their, you know, financial statements and so on and so forth and get into their financial metrics, I mean, I don't know, what does the market environment for those businesses, various businesses, what does the economic backdrop look like? like going forward?
Mm-hmm. Sure. What you have to do, Carol, is just look at what the market is trying to buy and bidding up and what the market is selling. And right now the market is selling anything that's economically sensitive. People are nervous that we're long in the tooth on this recovery. People are nervous that the stock market is overpriced. So companies and stocks that are sensitive to the market and the economy are what's cheap right now. So names like financial services like the banks, Morgan Stanley and KKR that I always talk to you about are still attractive. What's not attractive are, as we talked about, high dividend stocks and then also consumer staples. Those are considered low beta, low risk, and so people are paying big prices for the Cokes and Pepsis of the world. So what's attractive today are kind of the lighter industrials, auto suppliers, and then financial services companies. Those kinds of stocks are what's for sale today.
Has the move then into financials, because we have talked about here on Bloomberg that we have seen, though, a move into some of the financial names, some of the names that are more sensitive to what's going on in the economy. That makes sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. They've come back since the end of June when they got crushed by Brexit.
Right.
So a name like Morgan Stanley has gone from 25 to 31, but that's still about 10 times earnings, still a big discount to the market overall. Something like KKR, you and I have talked about how that's one of the great businesses mm-hmm. ever invented, still trading at a very modest premium to book. So yes, they've had a little bit of a recovery here, but still down a lot from a year ago.
Hey, back to Tiffany for a moment before you go. So, if Wall Street's not necessarily buying, the affluent consumer isn't buying. I mean, does the Tiffany model, like you say, you like the company, it still makes sense longer term?
Absolutely. It's one of the great businesses there is. They have gross margins of over 60%. So when you buy a diamond ring, or I buy a diamond ring for my wife and I pay $1,000, that ring only costs them $400. And their operating margins of over 20% are among the highest in all of retailing. There's really no threat from Amazon here. You can't get a Tiffany ring on Amazon. It's one of the great retailers in the whole world.
That's true. They have protected the brand. You can get a diamond ring on Amazon, but it's not going to be a Tiffany ring, that's for sure. All right, Charlie, be well. Thanks so much. Charlie Bobrinskoy, he's vice chairman and head of investment group over at Arrow Investments. They've got some $10.6 billion in assets under management. And as I mentioned, his Ariel Focus Fund beating most of his peers so far in 2016. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit more about Hampton Creek, that Mayo buyback. What's the Justice Department looking into? The details in just a moment. This is Bloomberg.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are trading lower as a 123-point rally in the Dow has completely fizzled. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now lower by 72 points at 18,376, a drop there of 0.4%. The bout of stock market optimism ignited by Janet Yellen's bullish economic assessment proved temporary, stocks slipping back into their three-week-old funk. Right now, we have got NASDAQ down 7 to 5204, a drop there of 0.1%. The S&P 500 index down 6 to 2166, a drop of 0.3%. Dow Industrials down 75, a drop of 0.4%. The 10-year down 5 30 seconds at yield 1.59%, and gold up 280 the ounce, higher by 0.2% to 1324. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
All right, Charlie Pellett, thank you so much. You're listening to the Bloomberg Advantage right here on Bloomberg Radio. Remember, Bloomberg News reported earlier this month that Hampton Creek was buying its own Mayo to perhaps make it look more successful. Let's get a little bit more on this story and get an update. Scarlett and Matt, thank you so much. Welcome everybody on Bloomberg TV to Bloomberg Radio. Let's bring in Olivia Zaleski. She's our technology reporter with Bloomberg News. Olivia, where are we on this Hampton Creek story?
Well, yesterday this morning we reported that the Department of Justice opened a criminal investigation into Hampton Creek and the purchase of their own products. Last week, we know that the Securities and Exchange Commission opened an inquiry into the company as well.
an investigation in early stages, but they're basically looking to see if Hampton Creek was kind of, I guess, amping up their numbers, correct?
Yes. We know that that's one of we know that's what they're interested in. We don't know if they're looking at other things yet.
Interesting. All right. So early in the stages, give us a little background on Hampton Creek, who they are, and, you know, why they might need to do this.
So Hampton Creek, it's an incredible company with a really beautiful mission, actually, that the mission of the company is to replace meat products with plant-based proteins. So, for example, if you have mayonnaise and you're putting egg in the mayonnaise, they would create a plant-based protein to use instead. And that's a really profound idea if you think about it as developing economies continue to grow and the appetite for meat products continues to grow, perhaps at an unsustainable level. So a lot of venture capitalists in Silicon Valley have really jumped on the bandwagon with this company and poured in money. We have Founders Fund giving them money, Coastal Ventures giving money, as well as some really notable large players in the space like Mark Benioff and Eduardo Saverin.
And what's interesting, what's interesting in terms of their strategy, right, they've done a lot of in-store demos to kind of popularize the product and say how it's maybe a better alternative to some established brand.
Exactly. So they've really built their brand based on these evangelists that they call Creekers, and they're across the country. Josh Tetrick has said that there are just over 100 of them, and they would do these in-store demos. What we found in our reporting is actually that job title or that job description really changed in 2014, and they started asking these people doing the in-store demos to start purchasing their own products to boost sales.
Interesting. Talk to us about the amount of money in terms of raising money and the backers that they've had.
So at the moment, we understand that the company is trying to close around any moment now that would value the company over $1 billion. And I know that they are interested in or that they are pursuing venture capitalists in Asia at the moment. The company also has raised to date about $220 million so far from these noted venture capitalists like Founders Fund, as well as Coastal Ventures, Horizons Ventures as well.
In the reporting that you guys have done and in talking to Hampton Creek, what do they say about the accusations?
So they say that it was all just a quality assurance program and was not material to their revenue anyway. They have admitted that they did do it to just get a little boost out of the gate, but they say the primary purpose of this was all quality assurance. And that is their argument, and they're standing by it. We did follow up with all of the Creekers that we spoke with and did our original reporting with, and they made it very clear to us that they were two separate programs, that product was purchased for quality assurance, but that these purchases were really simply just to boost sales because they didn't do any quality assurance on the products that they purchased.
All right, so what's the timetable now in terms of these investigations and what comes next?
You know, Carol, I really don't actually know that. What I do know, though, is that the DOJ and the SEC have both moved extremely quickly, which is uncharacteristic for these types of inquiries and investigations.
Yeah, I guess it's going to be interesting to see what ultimately happens and what the investigations find out and, you know, what the company has said and whether or not they were doing anything that was unusual. I mean, I don't know, do food companies do this? Have we ever seen any of the kind of, you know, instance of this?
So we spoke with several experts who all said that this sort of thing might happen, you know, here and there. You ask friends and family to, hey, come out, support our product, make sure you buy the shelf, you know. But there would to have a top-down coordinated effort where money is cash advanced to, you know, hundreds of dollars or cash advanced to people is strange and quite suspect from the several people that we spoke with.
All right, well, certainly something
and, spoken with the grocery stores, and they've made it very clear to us that this is not how quality assurance is done.
Yeah, it sounds pretty unusual to me, but we'll see what those investigations lead to. Olivia, thanks so much for the update. Olivia Zaleski, she's our technology reporter at Bloomberg News, writing about Hampton Creek and talking about Hampton Creek facing U.S. criminal probe over that mayonnaise buyback. This is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg Advantage with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
You're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Oz. You find the edge of wizard of Oz.
We're going to get the reasoning behind this song in just a moment because he doesn't like how central bankers are behaving. Vinny Catalano is back with us, president of Blue Marble Research, global investment strategist, also at Blue Marble Research, back with us in our Bloomberg 1130 studio. So the Wizard of Oz, we're off to see the wizard. Are you calling Janet Yellen the wizard?
Well, maybe the central banks in general might be wizards of Oz's. It's kind of an issue that that I thought
the wizard did get Dorothy back home, might I remind you.
No, good for him. That's a wonderful thing. The one thing before we get into a little bit of a discussion, but in this area, I do have a recommendation, and the recommendation is for President Obama. And before he leaves office, my recommendation is that he fire Janet Yellen and hire Bill Belichick.
Okay.
So that this way, Bill Belichick can appear before Congress and tell them to do your job. And that's the theme of what we're talking about today.
Why don't you think they're doing their jobs?
Well, okay, we know that monetary policy alone cannot do for the overall economy, U.S. economy and world economy, what monetary and fiscal policy and some other dynamics too, regulatory changes, et cetera, and structural changes can do. And yet, what have we been experiencing for the past 7+ years? Monetary policy, a little bit of fiscal.
But wait, Vinny. Mm-hmm. But isn't that because you haven't had anybody else doing fiscal policy?
Yeah.
Or enacting different initiatives to kind of help out the economy and so on.
Sure. And under those circumstances, the central bankers have said, well, you know, we'll do everything we can and we'll continue to do everything we can and we'll do everything that we can and we'll do everything that we can. Yeah. And
they're coming to the end of that, and we see that.
Well, let's hope that. They should have come to the end of this a while ago. That's the point that I'm trying to bring up. Yes, we're at a point here where they're going to be raising rates, and are very likely that they will be raising rates. But the box that they put themselves in is a very dangerous box. They know it. Every reasonable economist that I read knows it. Every market strategist knows it. And that is that if you had an economic downturn in any shape, manner, or form at this point in time,
there's not much they can do.
There's not much they can do. They need that cushion. There is no cushion. They painted themselves into this corner, and it's a corner that they didn't have to paint themselves into. And I understand why. And a large reason that they've done it is that they are, as this email debate that I had with a former Fed president and former FOMC member, is that they're a bunch of unelected officials, his words, not mine, that are there to, you know, do what the best that they can. But the truth of the matter is that sometimes what you ought to do if you're an academic is maybe stop being from academia and maybe be a little bit more hardball in your approach in dealing with elected officials, and really, in effect, say, to communicate to the elected officials, hey, guys, do your job.
Well, as my husband always says, look forward, don't look backward. I mean, we are where we are at this point. So, and this is the system that we kind of live within. Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here?
Well,
and what does it mean for investors?
Yeah, well, what it means for investors is that you have exactly what the consequences of these actions have taken place over the years, which is by all measures an inflated market, with the exception of one that I've read, that this market, the equity markets, that is, are overvalued. And so with that, if you had any kind of economic downturn, if you had any kind of slippage in terms of earnings expectations and growth, et cetera, that would be a problem. And the market could, react to it rather negatively. But then there's another related problem that has really distorted the system so badly. Some have written about it, but you don't really hear too much about it. You have certain traditional type of institutional investors, pensions, insurance, and endowments, mm-hmm. that have required rates of return, that have fixed mixes of asset mixes between stocks, bonds, and cash. Well, what's been happening over the last number of years is as those bonds have come due, well, those higher-yielding bonds are gone.
Right. They've gone into other asset classes, much more risky.
And when you see the run-up in emerging market debt and things of that, high-yield debt, et cetera.
Yeah. No, we've talked about it with our Janet Lauren, who covers higher education for us here at Bloomberg News, and endowments, just not meeting their returns and what it means in terms of what they're doing. So I don't know. How do we – do we, though, yet know how it ends? I mean, isn't this why the Fed and central banks are so – slow and kind of unwinding all of this?
That is absolutely true. They have to be slow because this is the box they're in. This is the building of their own doing.
But to be fair, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit with you, as I like to do. But I mean, the financial crisis we hadn't gone through something like this before.
Sure. And they did exactly what they needed to do in the beginning.
Right.
And they did exactly what they needed to do for a certain number of years. Wonderful. Absolutely
great.
But
they needed to stop.
Spot on. But then you had to stop at some point. And even if you continue the policies that you were engaged in, the thing that you needed to do, they talk about forward guidance and influencing the environment and influencing the market and all. Why not use that platform every time you're in front of Congress to use that platform to really use stronger language?
But they did. I mean, I just remember.
They did?
Well, whether it was strong enough or whatever, but I can't remember how many times we kind of joked that when, whether it was Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen, where she was kind of, they were trying to lecture lawmakers to say, you guys have to do more. And nobody did.
Well, here's a line from her speech today, if I may say so, okay? A wide range of possible fiscal policy tools and approaches could enhance the cyclical stability of the economy.
Wait, say it one more time.
Okay, I'll say it again. A wide range of possible fiscal policy tools and approaches, that's do your job, okay, could enhance the cyclical stability of the economy. I mean, that's like softball time. Why not be much more direct? Might not be much less collegial?
Why did they have to even lecture lawmakers about what needs
to
be done?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not
just the Fed that's going to help out the economy. It's supposed to be policies.
Absolutely.
That's why you have different people who end up in the White House and different people being elected to Congress. It's based on their policies that are supposed to help their constituents, various states, and we don't see it. What's interesting is you do, though, see states and municipalities kind of taking the ball and running on its own. We saw municipal bond offerings up, and they're not just, you know, replacing higher, you know, interest rate debt, if you will. They're actually putting it to work.
Yeah. Well,
we are starting to see them spend on infrastructure and so on.
Hopefully,
I'm just telling you in terms of municipal bonds. We're just looking at the numbers.
That's right. Hopefully it'll be enough. Hopefully we can get to that point where we have escape velocity. Hopefully we do not end up with this secular stagnation that's been going on indefinitely. Hopefully the comments that Hilsenrath wrote about in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about the Fed and the consequences from a sociopolitical point of view and what it's led to in that regard, and what will happen, I believe, in the next number of years when you have this backlash of the Bernie supporters and others on the assumption that Hillary Clinton is president.
I just want to mention to everybody, hold on for a second, Vinny. Shares of BlackBerry have been halted in trading pending some news. Last trade, I'm looking at the stock.
Than the neutral rate would have been before the crisis.
And how long would it take you to get there? And the reason I ask, of course, is because for people on Wall Street, the question is, how fast do you go to get there?
That's going to depend on incoming data. It's very, very difficult to say, and there's no preset course. So you've really got to see how the economy performs. Do we continue on this path? I think if we do continue on this path of growth around 2% and reasonably good job creation, then we should, again, be patiently raising interest rates as the economy and, you know, and the global economy warrant.
The argument from a number of Fed officials has been that as the unemployment rate goes down, inflation should go up, the Phillips curve. Unemployment's come way down. Inflation hasn't gone up. Are you a Phillips curve believer?
It's an interesting question, and what's happened is that there's something called the wage Phillips curve. So as the labor market tightens, then wages should go up, and we're just beginning to see that now. We're seeing clear but not really strong dispositive evidence, though, that wages are moving upward. That's good. The transmission between wages and prices has actually weakened over the past 20 years. And also, so the transmission between slack in the labor market and wages has weakened. So the Phillips curve is, as we say, flat, meaning that the connection between slack, wage inflation, and price inflation is much weaker than it has been historically.
Then what gives you confidence that you'll get to the 2% target?
Well, if you look where we are right now, core PCE inflation is about 1.6%. Maybe 30 basis points of that you can attribute to the strong dollar, weak, you know, lower import prices and weak oil prices, lower oil prices. So as we move through those effects, those should be transient effects. That gets you fairly close to the 2%. It doesn't leave a big gap between 2% and where you would be pro forma for those things. So if we stay on that path with oil prices basically flat, then and the dollar has been, you know, it hasn't been going up. It's actually going down this year a little bit. Then 2% inflation would be very close. Then you don't need a very steep Phillips curve to get the last 10 basis points.
the dollar you mentioned, it's been cited as a reason for the Fed to be cautious. But as you note, it rose significantly in 2014 and has been flat since, gone down a little bit this year. Has it moved off your radar screen as a real danger, a real impediment, a headwind to a Fed move?
Well, remember that along with the dollar being more stable and actually going down just a bit this year, has been the market's expectation that rates would be lower than the market thought. So to the extent the market changes its expectation that rates will be higher than it now thinks, you might well see a stronger dollar. So it's an important factor in a world where other major central banks are reducing interest rates. Inevitably, the dollar is going to be a mechanism for shifting demand overseas. It did that in 2014 and 15. And it can do that again. It's not a current concern, but it's something to keep an eye on.
There's been a lot of criticism of the Fed lately and questions about Fed credibility, because markets have read Fed statements to mean an interest rate increase is coming and then it's pulled off the table. Do you have concerns about your communications ability and about the credibility you have with financial markets?
I think our framework is clear, or should be clear, which is that if you see progress towards 2% inflation, progress towards full employment, reasonably strong demand, the committee seems to want, and I would support, a gradual pace of rate increases. Now, the data can come in, they can surprise on the downside or the upside. We did have some significant downside surprises, employment reports and weak top-line growth. Inflation has performed about as expected, and so we've reacted to incoming data. I think when you're data-driven and when you're in a mode where you can and should be patient, that's how it's going to look when the data are volatile.
The data are volatile, which is a criticism of the Fed, because you look at something like the May payrolls report, which everybody said put the Fed off a rate increase in June, and now we've recovered back up to 190,000 average over the last 3 months, and it was apparently just statistical noise.
Well, but we didn't know that in May, did we? You know, you had a combination of weakening growth. You had significant risk events in the global economy, and you had suddenly slow payrolls. All through the last 3 years, we've been able to point to very strong payroll growth as kind of anchoring the central view that the economy is, in fact, very strong. You could look through volatile GDP growth, which is very volatile on a quarterly basis. You can't take much signal. So when the labor market sends a negative signal for the first time, really, in 3 years, you've got to look at that. I think the wise thing is to be patient, and I think we did the right thing by waiting.
You have a background in financial markets. Do you think that the Fed has been pushed around too much by financial market expectations?
No, I don't. I mean, honestly, just speaking for myself, what I care about is the real economy. A little bit of market volatility. Market volatility doesn't tend to leave a mark on the real economy. If you go back and look at the taper tantrum, it didn't really leave a mark on payrolls or growth or inflation. So I'm really concerned about what's the right thing over the longer term, medium and longer term, for the economy. Not so much on market reactions in the short term. I really don't think about that much. I think about more the real economy.
Subject of this conference, monetary policy in the future, basically. Let's start with the predicate question. Do you think the current way monetary policy is conducted, the current tools that you use, the models that produce the forecasts on which you base your policy, does it still work?
Those are different things. So I do think we have a framework, a policy framework, which is the overnight RRP and interest on excess reserves and the federal funds rate in the middle. That seems to work. The one rate increase that we've done went quite smoothly. So I think we have the tools to control interest rates. I think that's pretty clear. I think that there are many questions in economics which are really under study right now, not just at the Fed, but throughout the world economics community, which is, you know, low productivity growth and low interest rates and low inflation. Why are they happening? What can we do about them? Many of the answers will not be monetary policy answers. They will be answers for private sector people and governments, legislatures and such. But it's a time for introspection on those kinds of issues, and some of that's what we're talking about at this conference.
All right, you've been listening to Jay Powell, member of the Board of Governors at the Federal Reserve, speaking with our own Michael McKee, a Bloomberg Surveillance, and our Bloomberg News Economics Editor. Jay Powell saying that the Fed can afford to be patient and expect some gradual rate increases. We should be on a program of gradual hikes, really mirroring what we heard from Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen earlier in her speech at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. looming. Janet Yellen saying rate hike case has strengthened, though, in recent months. Right now, we have stocks pretty much hovering near their lows of the session. That means we're down about 8.5 points on the S&P 500. Dow down about 0.5%, down almost 91 points. And the Nasdaq down about 0.25%, a decline of 13 points. Taking Stock coming up next with Kathleen Hayes. She is at Jackson Hole, so she will join her co-host, Pim Fox, talk more about what happened at that annual symposium, also take you through the close here. If you want more of that conversation, all the Fed speakers, just check out Bloomberg.com. This is the Bloomberg Advantage, and this is Bloomberg.